From KCRW, this is Here Be Monsters. I sometimes think about how different the world would be if we could remember the first years of our lives, the first moments of consciousness. I like hearing about people's earliest memories because they're usually tactile, almost bewildering. Mine are being asked how to spell my name and not knowing what that meant, trying to see myself blink in the reflective handle of the dishwasher, which was at my eyeline, jumping on a miniature trampoline in Grandma's attic, not realizing it was miniature because it was just the right size for me. All these little moments, when the world seems so big and out of reach, where everything makes perfect sense even though you don't know what or why anything is anything. What would people be like if we could remember becoming people? Maybe it's too overwhelming, to be nothing and then to suddenly be someone. Maybe that's why we forget. When you're little, you don't know that things can be another way because you only know what you know. And part of the pain of getting older is realizing that things could have been a lot different. I don't remember my parents being married. They divorced when I was 2.5, and apparently they each knew the marriage had to end before I was even born, and they agreed that my sister and brother would be better off with divorced parents than they would be with angry parents. They had no plans to have another child, until I disrupted that. They both tell me that after my mom got pregnant with an unexpected third baby, it got better for a few months. Dad was less impatient, mom was less resentful. They both thought that they'd cleared a rough patch and it would be okay. It wasn't okay, though, and still came this baby with big brown eyes. They named her Bethany Jo, and both set to work dissolving the marriage. My grandparents, my mom's parents, came down from Montana a lot the summer of my parents' divorce. My dad helped my mom pack her things into Grandpa Boyd's truck. On their last trip down, my grandparents took my big sister, who was 7, and my big brother, who was 5, up to Montana with them. A few days later, it was just me and my mom in the brown van, packed to the brim with the last of our things. They both tell me that they cried and hugged a lot and told each other that they were sorry. My mom says this last day in Utah was one of the saddest of her life. I don't remember being sad, though. I don't remember any of it. And I don't remember that trip to Montana from Utah either, but it's one of my mom's favorite stories to tell about me as a little kid. As she tells it, this was in 92, back when it was socially acceptable to travel with a 2.5-year-old in the front seat without a car seat. My mom made me wear the seatbelt, but she said it didn't really make a difference because I just curled up on the seat like a sleeping cat. She doesn't remember if I got carsick on the trip, but I'm sure I did. My childhood and adulthood have been plagued with carsickness and related stomach aches. It's as if my body is saying, "Slow down. You're not meant to travel at such distance and speed." After we left, Dad left too. Within a year, the Air Force moved him to Alaska. He says he was happy to leave Utah behind and got used to living alone again. He made the trip down to see us a few times those first few years. Then my mom remarried and got pregnant with my little sister. Our family was growing, we were getting older, and my parents decided that we were big enough to go on trips with Dad. One summer, my big sister got to visit Dad in Alaska for a whole month. At first, my brother and I were jealous, but then we were told that when Dad brought her back, he'd take us on our own special trip, just the three of us. We weren't going to Alaska, he told us, but we were going somewhere even better. Thank you. Here Be Monsters, the podcast about...
Long before the people came.
The podcast about...
The unknown.
From the back seat of Dad's impeccably clean car, I study him. His hair is black, wrapped around the side and back of his head, and absent from the top, except for a few stray hairs that stand up and sideways. From the rearview mirror, I can see his eyes, brown like mine, squinting in the sunlight. I am 4.5 years old, and it is summer. Outside of the car is Idaho, and yellow-green grass rolls across hills, and ponderosa pines stand tall and fragrant. I only see my dad once or twice a year. I talk to him on the phone every week or so, and we have a framed picture of him in his Air Force uniform in our living room that I like to look at. But seeing him in person, seeing him speak and laugh and move, is a gift. That's my daddy. That's him, right there. My brother Jared sits in the front seat. He is 7, and he wants to know why Idaho is called Idaho. Dad thinks a minute and says he doesn't know, but that's a good question. Today, we're in Idaho because Dad wants to show us where his family is from. We're visiting Kuski and its neighbor, Kamiai. Dad didn't grow up here, but he loves it here. It's where his parents are from, and it's where his cousins lived. And he tells us that his favorite place to visit when he's out here is the heart of the monster. My brother asks him what kind of monster, and my dad tells him that he'll have to wait and see. The windows are down partway and the car is hot. My brother explains to my dad what air conditioning is and how the car can actually make cold air. My dad smiles as he listens, and then tells my brother that air conditioning wastes gas. My brother tells him that it doesn't waste gas in Mom's car, and Dad laughs and says, "Oh yes, it does." Dad tells us we can roll the windows down further if we want more air. I don't want to because I hate the smell of gasoline, because it makes me carsick. It starts as a light nausea in my throat and swells to include headaches and stomach aches. Laying down helps, although it means the seatbelt will dig into my throat. I tuck the shoulder strap under my armpit and tip over onto the seat.
Bug, you need to fix your seatbelt.
I groan and tell my dad that I don't like it. He laughs and tells me it doesn't matter if I don't like it, I need to wear the seatbelt right. My brother asks where the heart of the monster is. Not far from here, Dad says. When my brother insists on knowing more, Dad tells him that it's a spot where he and his cousins used to play, back when he was little like how we are now. I never understand what adults mean when they say things like this. How could my dad have ever been little like how I am now? The seatbelt is back in its proper position, strapping down my chest and shoulder. I lean my ear on the door and let the warm air roar over my head. It smells dry and grassy and gasoline-y outside. My stomach, which has been burbling on a low simmer, lurches. I tell my dad my stomach hurts. His eyebrows are furrowed as if he doesn't know what to do next. My stomach lurches again. I tell my dad, it really hurts. He looks at me in the rearview mirror and asks if we need to stop. I tell him, yes, we need to stop. And, thinking I'd come up with a proper antidote, I tell him that I need Band-Aids for my stomach. My dad cracks a big smile at me in the rearview mirror. When I'm older, he'll tell me that he always loved the way I pouted, that he thought it was cute. Today, he laughs his quiet laugh and then guffaws. Band-aids, huh? We take a detour and head toward a grocery store. As we drive, Dad tells us that later he wants to take us to visit his dad, our Grandpa Bill. I'm confused because I only have one grandpa, and that's my Grandpa Boyd, my mom's dad, and Grandpa Boyd lives far away from here. Dad tells us that Grandpa Bill is in heaven, and we're going to visit his gravestone. Both of Dad's parents died within a year of each other. They were high school sweethearts, Bill Denton and Jean Emery. Dad tells us they really loved each other, that his parents did the best they could. After they married, they left Idaho and moved to Spokane, Washington, and started a family. When I am older, I will learn that my grandma Jean spent much of her life addicted to alcohol. Motherhood overwhelmed her, so she avoided it by drinking. Grandpa Bill tried to save her, but he didn't know how. They divorced when my dad was 2 years old. Dad doesn't remember Grandma Jean at all. He never talked to her on the phone after she left, and he never got to know her family. After his mom left, my dad went to live with his Aunt Ruth in Kamiai for a few years. He was little enough that he called Aunt Ruth Mommy, and she corrected him only some of the time. When Grandpa Bill remarried and came for his children, Aunt Ruth told him that if he had waited any longer, she would have fought to keep my dad with her. Sometimes my dad wishes she had, because Grandpa Bill's new wife was mean, and she was especially cruel to my dad. When my dad was 13, Grandpa Bill died suddenly of a brain aneurysm. Less than a year later, Grandma Jean died too. I'm not sure how. Some of the family thinks it was cirrhosis of the liver, and some of the family thinks she took some pills that were lethal when mixed with alcohol. Dad wonders if she died of a broken heart after losing Bill for good. Dad likes to think that they found each other in heaven. These are all things I will learn as an adult, but for now I am still 4.5 years old, and all I know is that they're gone. Dad wishes his parents could have known their grandkids. They would have loved you, he tells us. After Grandpa Bill died, my dad came back to Kamiai again to live with Aunt Ruth for a few months. She was kind to him, and his cousins took care of him, and he loved them for it. With them, Dad got to stay a kid for a little longer, playing outside, recounting the legend of the heart of the monster again and again. That's why he loves it here. It's the last place where someone took care of him. We arrive at the grocery store. My dad holds my hand and I hold my stomach. My brother trails behind, extolling the virtue of a pack of trading cards he's seen hanging near the checkout line at the front of the store. He asks my dad about the heart of the monster again, wants to know if it's real. Dad tells us that it is. He tells us that there is a legend about the monster that is sacred to the Nez Perce people. They believe that a long time ago, there was a monster, a giant who tried to eat all the animals. But the coyote outsmarted the monster and cut out his heart, and all that remains of the monster is buried under a hill nearby. We find Band-Aids. There are cartoon-branded Band-Aids, patterned with Lion King and Elmo and Rugrats. My brother suggests I get X-Men Band-Aids because they might give me superhuman healing powers. We buy plain, peach-colored Band-Aids and return to the car. My brother wants to know if we can go to the heart of the monster now. And my dad sighs, "Yes, it's only a few minutes away." We drive by houses and Dad tells us names of people who used to live there. We drive by a high school, and Dad tells us he likes to imagine his parents meeting and falling in love. He wonders out loud if they used to stand under that tree together, or if Bill used to carry Jean's books for her. Life was different back then, he tells us. My brother and I don't know what he means by this. The hot air pours through the window, and my helmet of blonde hair becomes increasingly knotted and tattered. The pain in my stomach still thrums uncomfortably, and I tell my dad again that I don't feel good. I can tell he's worried about me and my stomach because he has a serious look on his face. We arrive, park the car, and walk toward a craggy hill. The hill is not very tall for a hill, but for a heart, it's enormous. It's conical, covered in grass and loose soil. A modest wooden fence surrounds it, and there is a cement path that leads from the parking lot to a bench in front of the hill. I hold my stomach, my dad holds my hand, and my brother quickly finds a stick to hold and runs off to explore. We sit in the shade. I lay down onto Dad's lap. I lift my shirt and I show him my belly, and I tell him where to apply the band-aids. Here, I tell him. Here, he asks. Yes, and here, I say. Every time he strips a band-aid onto my stomach, I feel another pain emerge elsewhere. I point, and he obliges. My brother wanders around, swinging his stick like a sword. He walks up to the plaque that the National Park Service made, finds a button labeled Nez Perce Creation Legend, and presses it.
This is the story of Itzayaya, the coyote, and Iltzwautzi, the great monster, whose hardened heart lies in front of you. It happened many years ago, long before the people came. Once upon a time, a coyote was building a fish trap on the river when he learned that a great monster was eating all the animals. So coyote set out to see what he can do. Along the way, he took a bath and dressed up to make himself tasty to the monster. Climbing up the ridges, he looked out over the land. Suddenly, he saw a great head.
I listen to the story, head in my dad's lap. He lightly strokes my hair, leans his head back and closes his eyes. Back when he was a boy, there wasn't a plaque with a button and speakers, but he knows the story. He knows about how the coyote tricks the monster into swallowing him, how he saves the animals by cutting off pieces of the monster's heart. As I listen to the story, I imagine an enormous stone heart under the hillside. And I shudder, and I feel small, but a little less carsick. I leave the band-aids on my small belly and walk with my dad and my brother back to the car. He says it's time to visit Grandpa Bill now. We are driving again, and this time I'm in the front seat. Dad says I should stare ahead, keep my eyes on the road, and that'll help me feel better. I do what he says, leaning my head on the door. As we arrive at the cemetery, Dad realizes then that he doesn't have any flowers. He can't come to his father empty-handed. He looks around, and there's a yellow house next to the cemetery that we passed on our way in. In front of the house are two flower beds growing beautiful daffodils. Dad parks the car under the shade of a tree, and tells us to wait for him. Dad knocks on the front door and waits. A light wind rustles the dry grass. He knocks again, and when no one answers the second knock, Dad steps off the front porch and kneels in front of the daffodils. Gingerly, he picks 4 or 5 flowers. I can tell he's staggering the ones he picks so as not to leave a hole in the flower bed. Dad returns to the car, flowers in hand. He is sheepish, and he tells us that wasn't a nice thing that he did, but that he would have asked if they had been home. He tells us that he hopes that whoever lives there won't be too upset. My brother asks if taking someone's flowers like that is stealing. The three of us walk to a series of gravestones with a familiar pattern of letters on them. I recognize the name Denton, our name. That one is your Grandpa Bill, Dad tells us. My dad stands, hands in his pockets, looking down at the gravestone adorned with daffodils from the yellow house. I look at him. His shirt is tucked in, and his wrist has a permanent tan line left by his watch. He looks tired, even though he's smiling. It's a different smile than the one I'm used to seeing in the photo of him in his Air Force uniform. I'm not sure why, but I study my dad, and I commit him to memory.
He would have loved you kids.
I scratch my stomach, sticky with Band-Aids. My stomach doesn't hurt anymore. Just my heart, swollen with this new kind of pain. This episode is dedicated to the grandparents I never met, Bill Denton and Jean Emery. Special thanks to my dad, David Denton, and my brother, Jared Denton. Thanks also to Tammy Clark, Ashley Fryer, Denise Hendrickson, and everyone else who shared memories and family history with me. To see pictures of me and my family from back when I was little, go to hbmpodcast.com. Audio from the Heart of the Monster site, courtesy of the Nez Perce National Historical Park, used with permission. This episode was written and produced by me, Bethany Denton, with editing help from Jeff Emptman. Music by The Black Spot. Here Be Monsters is distributed by KCRW. Our senior editor there is Kristen Lepore. We get additional support for freelance contributions from KCRW's Independent Producer Project. Thanks for listening. More episodes soon.